Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. From WFIU, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
62.31%. 62.31%. It's just the proof and then the ABV.
This week on Earth Eats, we're sure to get you in the holiday spirit with a behind-the-scenes look at the making of a walnut liqueur. Earth Eats visits Cardinal Spirits on Bottling Day. And Chef Daniel Orr has a spicy twist on traditional latkes for Hanukkah. His are made with sweet potatoes. Coming up in the next half hour here on Earth Eats.
Hey, Kate, how's it going?
Pretty good, Alex. What's new for you?
What's new for me, Kate, is this week's news. We've got a story about an amazing trove of food industry documents that anyone can access, so you can see for yourself all the ways the food industry has influenced the science of public health. I think researchers are going to have a ball with that one. I kind of want to dive in myself. Also, I don't know how to yoke these two stories together, so I'll just tell you that our other story is on California's ban on eggs laid in cages.
Okay.
A new collection of documents from the food industry reveals a decades-long public relations war against science and public health. Hackers, scholars, and journalists collected these documents over the last several years. Now, more than 32,000 of them have been put into a public, searchable database at the University of California, San Francisco. The Food Industry Documents Collection includes internal memos and attacks on research that might hurt the industry, such as the so-called sugar papers that a researcher found in 2015. Those papers show that the sugar industry knew in 1950 that sugar caused tooth decay. But throughout the 1960s and 70s, it worked with the National Institutes of Health to push research on tooth decay away from sugar reduction. The collections also reveal a number of direct links between the strategies of the sugar and tobacco industries. Eggs raised in cages may never show up again in California if the Supreme Court takes the advice of the Department of Justice. Last week, the Justice Department advised the Supreme Court not to hear a lawsuit the 12 states had brought against California. To the chagrin of egg producers across the country, Californians have passed a string of animal welfare laws over the past decade. In 2008, voters approved the Prevention of Farm Animal Cruelty Act. That meant farmers in the state could no longer raise animals in confined spaces where they can't stand up or turn around. In 2015, California banned the sale of eggs laid in confinement, wherever they're from. The states in the lawsuit say the laws will lead to higher egg prices for consumers. But the Department of Justice says California's law is only one of many possible factors in the rising cost of eggs. California is among the top egg-producing states in the country, with over 13 million laying hens and more than 3.7 billion eggs produced in 2017. And that's the news. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killow for those stories.
And thank you, Alex Chambers.
My pleasure, Kate.
Thank you. each bottle has two labels.
Yep. Got a front and a back. Butts up against here and press it against this face here. And
Cardinal Spirits is a craft distillery in Bloomington, Indiana. A favorite spirit available this time of year is their Nocino. I spoke with co-founder Adam Quirk in late October to find out more about this walnut liqueur.
We're bottling Nocino today, which is a traditional Italian liqueur. It's made with green walnuts, so it's basically walnuts that are harvested before they're actually ripe. We actually harvest all of these up in Fort Wayne. My wife's family has a grove of a few walnut trees, and it's a specific kind of tree. A lot of what we see around Indiana is black walnut, and we've actually used a few different kinds in our development. Turns out the black walnut is somewhat astringent when you use it as a Nocino base. So we've started using my wife's family trees, and it's a English walnut, so it's kind of like the walnuts that you actually use for cooking or food, or, you know, the walnuts you buy at the store. It's also known as Carpathian walnut or Persian walnut. So it's basically, it's a similar tree, a little bit less bitter, less astringent, and more nutty, earthy flavor. I have walnuts littering my yard too, but yeah, those the black walnuts are good for a lot of things, but not necessarily the best for this. And I've actually had black walnut Nocino before from other distillers. It's just a different product. I think that there's some people want that sort of astringency and bitterness. It's just what we're going for was a warmer, earthier, softer flavor. We always harvest the week of the 4th of July. That's kind of our own little tradition in Italy. Traditionally, it's the Feast of St. Michael, which is the third week of June, so it's close. The week of the 4th of July is when I always go up there anyway, because my wife's family has a big 4th of July party. So I've been going up there for 8 years now, and now I bring up all of our Cardinal Spirits. A lot of Cardinal Spirits staff comes up with me. We just throw some ladders up against the tree. Some of us climb into the trees. It's pretty fun. You harvest them when they're about the size of, I would say, like between a golf ball and a racquetball. They're all very bright green. And yeah, you take them, you quarter them with a butcher's knife or some kind of sort of hefty knife. You can't just slice right through them. But they're definitely not as hard as like a shelled walnut that you would harvest right now when they're dropping, right? So they're still soft. The inside looks a lot like a brain. It's really weird. It's like a little translucent brain inside. You quarter them and then you drop them into the spirit, and we use our vodka. We actually distill a white grape base vodka, and that's what we use for most of our spirits. Our vodkas, our gins, our liqueurs are all made with this same fermentation that we do here. The walnuts sit in the vodka for almost 3 months, infusing and extracting all these interesting flavors. And right about now, our distiller, he tastes, starting in October, he's tasting every few days to make sure that it's coming along at the right time, and he tells us basically when it's time to bottle.
Since these are not the common black walnuts found all over Indiana, I wanted to hear more about the trees.
The trees were originally from the family farm in western Ohio. When Jessica, my wife's grandpa, moved over here, he took a couple of these trees with him, planted them in Fort Wayne. One of them ended up dying, and then one of them has turned into all these other trees. The trees themselves are pretty old now. They're 50 years old. And I've been looking pretty hard, actually, for the past couple of years to find others, because as this product grows in popularity, we need more and more walnuts. We really stripped them pretty bare this year. We got almost all of the green walnuts off. We took a lot of ladders and a lot of people, but still we're only going to be able to make under 300 cases. So if we could find more English or Carpathian walnut trees, we could make more product. If there's listeners out there that have English walnut trees, 99% of them would have black walnut. If they happen to have this other one, get in touch with us.
Well, there's also something charming, I think, about it being a limited edition product.
Yeah, the romantic inside me wants to keep it very limited, and the business owner wants me to make as many as I can, right? Because there's a lot of demand for it. We sell out, you know, so it's nice to have. It's never going to be a product that's as widely distributed as our vodka, which is in 11 states. It's more of a, this is a local product. We only sell it to a handful of accounts here in the state and a couple accounts out of state. It's truly a craft artist and spirit, and it's fun to make.
Before tasting this spirit at Cardinal, I'd never heard of Nocino. I was curious about the history.
Co-founder Rick Dietz was the one who found the original recipe, and he spent a lot of time working on finding traditional Italian recipes and then kind of combining them and translating them into English and then combining them into the recipe that we use today. But yeah, I mean, it's a product that goes back hundreds of years. It's in Italy, it's very much a family thing. It's not a product that you would necessarily see bottled and labeled in like a liquor store. It's more of a thing that every farm might produce. Every family might have their own little batch and their own little recipe. Every time we harvest, the next day we bring all the nuts into the distillery. We put a call out on social media for volunteers to come in. We feed them and give them a couple cocktails after the knife work. And yeah, it's a lot of fun that we set up some tables, give everyone a quick lesson in what to do. And then everyone walks away with very dark brown, black fingers because of the oils and the compounds, the tannins and the nut really does stain. The outside is very bright green, almost chartreuse. The inside is, you know, this creamy white, translucent flesh. And then you slice through it, and really within an hour or so, it does start turning dark brown. It's oxidizing all these tannins in the flesh of the walnut. And so once you put it in the liquid, it starts turning the liquid different colors. It starts, you know, turning this nice tannish bourbon color. And then it goes really, really dark to the point where after a month or so, you can't see through it. It's really viscous, oily looking stuff.
And what does it smell like in here when that's going on?
It's amazing. So the green walnuts have this really resinous smell. It smells like if you scratch a spruce tree or something. It's resinous. It's got a little bit of a minty smell, almost like lemongrass. It really doesn't smell or taste anything like the finished product, Nocino. So once you put it in the liquid and let it sit for a while, it really does just completely transform.
So it's just an infusion, like you're not heating it or putting it through any other kind of process?
No, it's all just sits in the tank at room temperature. It's not agitated, it's not heated, it just takes time.
How much of it are you making these days?
This is the biggest harvest we had. We're going to get almost 300 cases of 6 bottles each, so 1,800 bottles. It's the biggest one yet, but still it's a very, very small batch compared to everything else we do.
And I saw some photos where it was steeping in these beautiful glass vessels. Is that still how you do it?
Yeah, those were carboys that we had in my basement in 2013. So that was when Rick and I were doing recipe development. So back before we even had a facility, we were doing all this stuff in my basement, some of it more legal than others, but most of it legally. And infusing things at home is obviously legal. So when you start distilling things, it's not.
So those were photos from the early days, from just recipe development.
Yeah. So those are all 10-gallon carboys. Now we infuse in 270-gallon stainless steel totes.
They've also stepped up their bottling operations. These days, when the Nocino is ready in late October, early November, they set up the bottling machine and assemble the crew.
So what are the steps? You start with a clean bottle.
Clean bottles here, and they're stacked up, palletized. These are going to get stickers on the front and the back.
You've got the stickers?
I've got the stickers. My man here's got the pen. He's writing the percentage of the proof.
Little gold marker here, write the proof, and then the percentage right after that. And it goes up on the rack for the bottler. All
right. The bottle filler does 6 bottles at a time. And I have to say, it's a thing of beauty to see that dark amber liquid pouring into those gleaming bottles.
I'm putting the caps on the bottles by hand, and then we've got little plastic shrink wraps that we put over each cap, and then we seal them up with a heat gun.
They're moving at a pretty fast clip. I find Justin Huey, the head distiller at Cardinal, to follow up on a few questions I have about the Nocino.
Water, but I can talk and do that at the same time.
How did you know the Nocino was ready for bottling?
Really, with Nocino, the longer it sits, the better those flavors all kind of meld and become one. basically as much time as I can get it to sit before bottling. So it's ready because, you know, this is when you traditionally release it. We steep the walnuts for like 40 days, and then we add star anise, we add orange peel, we add vanilla, and allspice.
And you're adding the vanilla and allspice sort of as a whole bean, or?
Yeah, the vanilla is whole bean vanilla. Same thing with the allspice. It's all just botanicals, no extracts, no nothing, just the raw thing.
The vodka's doing the extracting.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
All this talk about how it's made, how long it steeps, the botanicals, it's fascinating. But maybe you're wondering how to enjoy Nocino once it's finally ready.
Well, it's just one of those spirits that you really don't have to do anything with. You know, like a bourbon, you can just pour it and have it neat. But then it's also so great for cocktailing. So it's this really versatile spirit.
That's Erica Sagone, the marketing and content director at Cardinal Spirits.
Last year, my absolute favorite thing to do with it is to make eggnog Nocino. That's only two ingredients. It's eggnog and it's Nocino. I like the eggnog from Trader's Point Creamery up in Zionsville. That stuff is magical. And I feel like when you get that and you put a splash of Nocino in it, it's just a drink that no one can turn down. Everyone's like, oh no, I don't really like eggnog. And you're like, no, just try this. The Nocino Sour is really excellent too. Just like a great, wonderful, rich fall drink without being heavy. Nocino Sour, we've got Nocino and sweet vermouth, demerara syrup, and lemon juice. You can also put egg white in it, like a traditional sour, and some bitters, and you just shake that up really well with some ice, strain it into a coupe. You might add a lemon peel for a garnish, and it's a great spirit-forward drink without tasting too much liquor. Just a really great, easy-drinking cocktail.
Adam Quirk has another way to enjoy Nocino.
So Rick brought it to my house back before we even had a name for the company, I think, and he had been making it himself for a couple years. I tasted it neat. It was something I had never tasted before. It was very rich. It had a lot of different flavors going on. And then he said, okay, now pour it over this vanilla ice cream. And that was a little mind altering. It was like, wow, this is crazy. Like it just completely changed the flavor of the actual liqueur. And I just thought to myself, well, everyone should try this at least once in their life because it was so good.
I prefer my Nocino neat. It's perfect for sipping on cold winter nights. But then again, I haven't tried it over vanilla ice cream yet. I can't wait. Find photos of the Nocino making process and cocktail recipes on our website. We'll also guide you to more information about Cardinal Spirits. That's eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Needmoreroasters.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Winter holidays require festive foods. As we find ourselves in the midst of Hanukkah, A latke recipe seems in order. Chef Daniel Orr is happy to oblige. But as is his way, there's a twist on tradition. These latkes are spiked with curry, and they're made with sweet potatoes from Chef D's own garden.
So we're going to use some of these little guys, and I'm just going to use a box grater, which is your basic cheese grater that most people have at home. And I'm just going to rub these sweet potatoes against it and shred them. This is going to give us probably about 2 cups of grated potatoes. We're using about 1 pound of sweet potatoes. Now, we're going to also make this a little different by adding some different ingredients. We're going to make these curried. So I love curry with a little bit of sweetness, and that's what the sweet potatoes do, is they add that nice flavor to it. All right, so I'm done grating those. Throw those in a nice big mixing bowl, and I'm going to add the remaining ingredients. Instead of regular flour, I'm using chickpea flour. So 1/2 cup of chickpea flour, 2 teaspoons of sugar. You could add honey if you didn't want to use white sugar. I'm going to also add 1 teaspoon of brown sugar. That gives it that molasses kind of flavor. We're going to add some baking powder, about 1 teaspoon. That's going to allow them to rise a little bit and not be so dense. I've got some cayenne pepper, which is our nice spicy pepper. And that's really to taste. I would say about 1/4 teaspoon. Curry powder, 2 teaspoons. Some cumin seeds, about 1 teaspoon. We've got 2 large eggs. That's going to be our binder. It's going to make everything come together. The buttermilk we put in there already, 1/2 cup. And we're going to season it with some salt and pepper. I'm just going to mix that together. If you want to make these ahead, you want to make these ahead and go ahead and fry them and then put them out on a piece of absorbent paper and then refrigerate them, and then you can reheat them. But if you make this potato mixture ahead, a lot of times it will darken and it won't be as appealing. The same thing if you use regular potatoes. If you decide you don't want to use sweet potatoes, go ahead and use regular potatoes. But again, you need to cook them as soon as you make this mixture. We're going to take them over to the stove. We're going to cook them in a decent amount of oil. We're going to put about 1/4 inch of frying oil in, heat it up until it's barely smoking, and then we're going to drop the batter in and flatten it out. And we want to cook them over about medium-high heat until they're golden and cooked through the center.
Now, if you're worried about all that oil, don't. Keep in mind, it's the holiday season. Maybe we can allow ourselves a few indulgences. Furthermore, in this case, the oil is significant. One of the reasons that latkes are traditional for Hanukkah is because they're fried in oil. And oil is an important piece of the whole Hanukkah story. The miracle of the oil lamp in the temple, the 8 nights. If you're Jewish, you probably know the story, and I'll refrain from further botching it here. If you aren't Jewish and you don't know the story, go ahead and look it up. So the problem I've always had making latkes comes at the frying stage. It's tricky, trying to keep them from sticking, getting them brown and crispy on the outside and cooked through in the middle. Let's listen to Chef Orr at the frying pan. I get the feeling he knows what he's doing.
Our pan is nice and hot. You want to make sure that your pan is hot before you add your oil. It's very important. Don't put oil in a cold pan because your food will still stick. All right. So what you want to do is to heat up your pan. What that does is the metal expands and it exposes all the surface area of the pan. Whereas if you put the oil in cold, not all the metal is exposed. And that's why food sticks, even if you put it in a cold pan and then heat it up. All right. So we're going to add our oil. You can see it's kind of dancing on top of the pan. Now we're going to flap those on. I'm going to turn the heat down just a little bit, and we're going to make these cakes about the size of a slider bun, you know, but flattened, probably about 2 inches in diameter, I would guess. And this recipe makes about 16 latkes. Okay, we're just going to nudge them with the back of a spatula, and just to encourage them not to stick. All right, I'm going to turn this heat back up. These guys are all, see how they're all just kind of dancing as I shake the pan. That's a good sign. It means that nobody's being belligerent. Everyone's doing like they're supposed to. Nice and brown.
Oh yeah, those are perfectly browned. Definitely no ornery latkes there. They're all sliding off.
Okay, we're just going to pat them down, congratulate them. And now that they've been flipped, I'm just going to sprinkle a little salt on them. It's important to do that salt while they're still hot, because that way the salt will adhere. So you need to season any of your fried foods while they're still hot. Okay, the second side, we're going to probably cook them for another probably 2.5-3 minutes, medium-high heat. We want them to get make sure that they're cooked in the center. Kind of move them around so they encourage them not to get stuck. And usually once you make that first little adjustment, then they're fine, just like any other pancake. We're going to put a little bit of apple butter in the center in a nice little dish. Serve it with a little bit of sour cream on the side. And those are our curried sweet potato latkes.
These latkes are gorgeous, and the curry sweet potato pairing is delightful. You can find this recipe online, along with a more traditional take made with regular russet potatoes, on our website, eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps with the show, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to
Adam,
Chris Dollar,
Randall Siva,
Rick Mellinger,
Connor Grimm,
Justin Huey,
Erica Sagone,
and everyone at Cardinal Spirits. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and I produce the show. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Production support comes from The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com.